This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one podcast in all things marketing, advertising, and communications. I'm your host, Ted Lau, award-winning agency owner, newly minted YouTuber, podcast host, and full-time family guy. Today, we have on the show Karen Leggett, Global Chief Marketing Officer, or CMO, at Manulife and member of the executive leadership team. In this role, Karen leads their marketing, innovation, digital, and analytics efforts globally. She oversees their customer experience, transformation, partnering with global technology and operations. Karen, welcome.
It's great to be here, Ted. Thanks for the invitation.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's start off. We always ask our superheroes, you know, how they got started. So tell me a little bit about what you did to get to where you are today.
Wow. Well, I guess I'm not a classic marketer. I sort of fell into marketing over the course of my career. I really always in financial services, started in insurance, spent the intervening part of my career in banking, and then back to insurance over the last number of years. And I've really been really privileged and lucky to have had a very diverse career over that period of time. I've done everything from running large businesses in both banking and insurance. I ran credit cards and payments and mortgages and secured lending, and then also running operations and contact centers, also strategy, product development. I've also had the opportunity to run sales and distribution over the course of my career, and I've been able to do so both within North America and also globally. And so it's really allowed me to get a very good sort of understanding of certainly customers and advisors, but also just of a business in terms of the upstream and downstream impacts of that. And coming into marketing was really an opportunity to do more transformation, where both in my previous role in one of the banks and then in my current role, you know, the CEOs were sort of visionary of bringing together not just brand and campaigns and CI and sponsorship, but actually bringing transformation, digital marketing, AI, and really helping to organize around the customer and being able to help the organization completely transform where it's going and how it's going to do that. And I think that's one of the exciting parts of marketing today is the ability for marketers to be very much at the center of an organization and driving so much change across businesses.
Absolutely. I think these days with marketing, like you said, we're kind of at the forefront of technology, and AI is on the lips of everybody right now. So maybe let's chat a bit about that. Let's dive into that. How has Manulife started doing a lot more AI and incorporating that into their marketing initiatives?
Well, I love that you're asking me that question because it's pretty much one of my passions. And it's an area that I'm really pleased to say Manulife is actually at the forefront of. In fact, in about a month or so ago, one of the external large consulting firms, which I cannot name, but did an actual external benchmarking exercise across financial services in terms of trying to determine which of the FIs was actually leading in the AI space. And Manulife came out, we came out in number one position as it relates to insurers. And we came out in top quartile, top decile, actually, in overall financial services. So we're really, really proud of that. But it's also not something we take for granted because it's such a, it's a fast moving space. And if, you know, as someone once quoted, life will never be this slow again, even though we feel it's moving at a rapid pace, you know, given the way it's going right now, it's just set to just explode. And I'm really thrilled because we've not just been experimenting. And I think that's what I characterize as the difference between maybe what we're doing versus our competitors is we made a clear determination that we didn't want to just be piloting and experimenting and playing around with AI. We actually wanted to change our world with AI. And we've done a number of things. You know, the first one we did was actually telling ourselves, you know, so many people are kind of a little bit afraid of AI. They don't really know what it is. They might have dabbled with, you know, ChatGPT, but, you know, they don't really know how it's going to impact their job or how it's going to change their world. And so we actually created our own internal secure version of ChatGPT, which we called ChatMFC for Manulife Financial. And we actually rolled that out to all 38,000 employees across the globe. And we did that in late May of this year. And we said, we want to democratize innovation and we want you to be part of the change. And we want you to be able to play around, experiment, demystify, and, you know, really think about your role and the productivity of your role and how do we start to connect the dots across our businesses, better serve our customers, better serve our advisors, and be able to help the organization continue to transform and shift. And so that's one area from a colleague standpoint that we've made significant change. And then we've been actively rolling out some really significant use cases. And a couple of examples I would give you is in our contact center. You know, one of the things you can think about is when you call a contact center and you're speaking to a representative, they have to document the essence of the call. Why are you calling? What's your issue? Is there follow-up required, et cetera? So that if you need to call back or a follow-up has to happen and there's a handoff to another individual, they can follow the plot of what was requested. And that, you know, as you think about a human, you're trying to listen to the customer's issue and you're trying to be empathetic, but you're also trying to document and get things right at the same time. So you've got an ear half listening while you're, you know, trying to get the other part of your job done. So through the deployment of our AI models, we now have all of that call summarization done by AI. And so it frees up our contact center representative to be able to devote 100% of their attention and time to the customer, be empathetic, understand, and be able to respond very, very quickly and increase, obviously, the accuracy of the notes as well from that. And so very powerful in terms of being a customer-centric organization. Another example I would share is what we call contract lookup. And we have some complex businesses like our long-term care business in the United States or our Canadian group benefits business in Canada, where you have a sponsor, which is an employer. You then have a member, which is an employee. And then those employees have spouses and children. They have different plans. They have different coverages. They have different maximums. They have different deductibles. And they partway over the course of the year have different balances remaining. And so you can imagine a contact center representative who gets a phone call from a customer asking a question. They have to validate all of that information. Who's your employer? What's your member number? You know, and look up all those things. And so that can run into a 13 to 15 minute phone call, which is obviously long for the customer and also long for the contact center representative and costly. And so now through Gen AI, we've actually put all of our contracts, all of our data into our large language model. And through that, the contact center representative is able to query the model and get the answer immediately within seconds as to what the answer to the customer's query is. And so you can imagine the improvement in the level of satisfaction of the customer. All of a sudden, you've taken a 15-minute phone call down to a 2 or 3 minute phone call. You can imagine the level of confidence and comfort that gives to the contact center representative who may or may not be brand new, you know, sourced through all that information. And it also provides, the AI also provides the actual contract and information where it pulled the data. And so if there's a further question or there's, you know, clarification required, then the contact center representative is in a position to be able to do that. So it is unbelievable, the sort of the power of what we've been able to deploy. And that's just a couple of use cases. I could go on for the rest of the podcast on just other deployments we've made.
Absolutely. Well, I'm hearing all this exciting stuff that you guys have done. And what comes to mind is safeguards. You're talking about how you wanted to democratize all the use cases and let your staff and team members use it. But what kind of safeguards do you have? How do you, there's all this conversation around biases and stuff like that. How do you, is there a process or is it programmed into the learning model already? What are you doing to make sure that people aren't abusing it purposely or accidentally?
It's a great question. And, you know, we've been doing AI and machine, what we now call shockingly traditional AI, which is, you know, essentially machine learning, we've been doing since basically 2016. So we have a long history in this space. We have 190 data scientists across our businesses globally. And, you know, these are very sophisticated and talented individuals that know this space very, very well. And we equally have very sophisticated and talented people in our risk team that helps us determine. And we have very clear risk models. We have materiality thresholds. You know, for our larger, more complex models, we actually have those validated by an external third party. And so we're very, very rigorous and disciplined in how we manage risk. And certainly Gen AI introduces a newer risk, if you will, which is called hallucination. If you've heard, I'm sure you've heard that term and others have heard that term. And that's essentially where, you know, Gen AI is dealing with a lot of both structured, but especially unstructured data in terms of knowledge management. And sometimes there may be conflicting answers or similar answers to a question, and the AI is going to have to choose. And sometimes it may not be the completely accurate answer. And so what we've done, and to go back to perhaps the contract lookup example, where the representative is putting in the query on the customer's question regarding their, say, their group benefits contract, we will actually have a champion challenger model that sits above the Gen AI model, and it will actually champion challenge at the same time, and it'll feed back a confidence score on the accuracy of the answer. And so if it's a very yes or no answer, then it'll come back with 100% accuracy that is in fact the correct answer. If it's more of a gray area of a question, it'll come back perhaps with an 80% score. And then the employee can actually, as I mentioned, will have the contract reference lookup that the AI has pulled up for the individual so that the human in the loop can actually validate and ascertain the veracity of the answer that they're providing to the customer. And so that's really, really important. And the other thing I would say is that, you know, humans are not infallible. There are lots of instances that we've all experienced in dealing with different companies where we've been provided with incorrect information or, you know, or whatever the case may be. And so AI is sometimes less infallible, is more accurate, perhaps, than sometimes human answers. And so it's really around being sure that we can reduce the threshold variability in answers. And we've done that very, very successfully. And it's also a reason why we have made, as it stands today, a very deliberate decision not to allow customers to self-serve against Gen AI, because we don't want to have a situation where an incorrect answer or query leaves our organization. And so we continue to believe that the power of AI plus the human in the loop gives us high confidence that, you know, we're doing things the right way and we're being very prudent in how we manage that.
In terms of the amount of investment, though, I mean, you're saying we want to be expert. We don't want to experiment. We have, what'd you say, 160 data scientists, and you've been doing this 190 data scientists. That's a lot of pocket protectors, I think. But you got a lot of investment there. I'm assuming this wasn't an overnight thing. You commented since 2016 you've been looking at this. How does an organization, large or small, make the use case to say, we're going to put in X dollars into this? And I know this is a marketing podcast, so would want to hear what you're doing on the marketing side when it comes to AI investment as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots to unpack in that one question, Ted. So let me maybe give you a couple of answers on the first part of that. You know, we've been on a path and you know, obviously what we pivoted to Gen AI, you know, hasn't been a very large investment because we've been making investments all the way along since 2016. And one of the areas I would call out, and you would know this being in marketing, is that AI is only as good as your data. And data is the, you know, the gold, or the you know, as water becomes more and more critical to our planet, is the water that really makes AI possible. And so we've been on a journey to become very strong cloud-based organization. We're one of Microsoft's largest insurance clients globally. In fact, largest cloud-based customers in the world. And we've been on a journey to actually render our data easily accessible and utilizable by our data scientists. And that is probably one of the biggest stumbling blocks that organizations are having as they continue to sort of pilot and experiment. They are challenged because sometimes their data is not in the shape that it needs to be in order to facilitate the utilization of it in their models. And so, you know, so we've been on this journey for a very long time to get us to this point. So I think that's where organizations have an opportunity. And quite frankly, there are also, you know, we don't just build all our own models. We actually consume industry models. So, for example, we're a heavy user of Amazon Connect and our contact centers, or we're users of Salesforce, or we will leverage AI from those providers in how we manage our business. So it's always a combination of, is it best to build? Is it best to buy? Or is it best to leverage existing? And so we'll make those choices very sort of use case dependent. But I think, you know, the reality is, and you know, we experiment in the sense that as we rolled out these use cases, we didn't try to do them in every contact center all at once. We chose what's the best contact center in which to do that, the one that we will learn the most, that will either, you know, kill the idea or will scale the idea. And if we can make it work, then we're going to scale it across all of our contact centers. And so we pick our spot, we pick our one use case, our geography, our location. We go to town on that, we prove it out, and then we turn around and we scale it across all of our contact centers, which is actually what we're in the midst of doing right now in those two examples that I gave you around call summarization and contract lookup. We are scaling that across all of our contact centers in North America and in Asia.
Well, then let's bring it back to marketing then. So this is great that you have all these examples. When it comes to marketing, you have global reach. You're in many, many countries across the globe. And we know that marketing sometimes is a very cultural phenomenon, and you need to be able to be tapped into what's going on in that particular region's zeitgeist, as it were. So how does that work when it comes to utilizing these large data sets? Are you able to discern, hey, I'm having a message in the UK versus my marketing message out in North America? How does that work for your learning and using of AI in marketing?
Well, again, there's actually a number of questions in there. So I love the way you're packing it all in. And I really do love the question, because as a truly global organization, you know, our challenge is always to try and get the value of the scale that we have, you know, the large organization that we are, the scale of having common capabilities, and always balancing that against the cultural relevance of the markets in which we operate. Because if you take Asia, for example, you know, we're across 10 markets, everything from highly sophisticated markets like Singapore and Hong Kong, two smaller emerging markets like Cambodia and, you know, Vietnam and Indonesia and Malaysia. And so not the same thing works in every market. And certainly North America is very different, even between Canada and the US in terms of what resonates and what is relevant is very, very different. And so we continually ride that fine balance between getting, you know, global scale, so where we can use common capabilities, but making sure that we always adapt for the local flavor. And I think a great example of that is in the most recent development of our global brand strategy. It's the first time that Manulife has had a globally consistent brand strategy that applies across all of our businesses. Prior to that, we were very much market by market because of the challenges of trying to get something that was globally applicable but locally relevant. We really, you know, did a bottoms up, and every market sort of did their own thing, and they had their own, you know, marketing campaigns and their own taglines and their own approach to the customer base. And we were able to bring very much this concept of global scale, where we developed a global brand strategy that we did a lot of research on, that we felt was very relevant across all the markets in which we operated. We found a creative platform through the use of questions that, again, are very relevant in all cultures. And the tagline, which our tagline is "Where will better take you?" We actually didn't translate that into all the languages in which we operated. We actually transcreated that into all of the languages in which we operated. And by transcreation, it means that we didn't take "Where will better take you?" and then just do a literal translation. Is we took the essence of what we were trying to communicate with "Where will better take you?" and we adapted it to the local culture and the local language so that the tagline was as close to the principles and the essence of what we were trying to communicate, but actually very much locally relevant in terms of cultural norms and the type of language with which we would use to describe. And that has been very, very successful. And we've done that across all the markets where we don't operate in English. And so I think those are great examples of how we've adapted that. And we've been able to take, we had 22 different agencies across the globe. We consolidated all of that into one single global tier one agency, and that's Dentsu that supports us, and one single tier two agency that supports us globally from the myriad of disparate agencies that we had. And so that allows us, again, to have a very clear understanding of what is our strategy, what is our creative platform. So how do we want to create that global consistency so we show up in a similar way across all of our markets and across our businesses, but then ensure that within the market, the creative is adapted to what it needs to be in that local market. And we are experimenting with AI on the marketing side. We've actually developed our own translation. We haven't yet scaled those models, but we've been developing them. Our data scientists from across our different businesses, and we've brought them into a pod, and we are actually developing, we've developed a large language model using the different languages in which we operate across the globe. And it's amazing because we can augment that model with our global brand strategy, our brand guidelines, our own sort of lexicon and way we talk about our business that is actually, you know, the kind of tonality and tonality and wording that we use to describe our products and our services and the assets that we have. And by augmenting that into the AI model, we are now in a position to be able to do, and we're moving towards being able to do self-serve translation across our businesses. So that's, you know, not yet deployed, but that's an area where we are piloting and where we hope to, you know, scale that down the road. And then what we're also doing is through the use of our AI models, we are actually now at a point where we're using it to generate more creative. So we have the ability to generate more creative ideas. We have the ability to generate and modify our creative with tools such as Adobe Firefly, as an example. We can actually modify and change images. And that allows us, when we are now rolling campaigns out and we've determined relevant cohorts for a campaign, we can actually now significantly less expensively adapt our creative to each of those cohorts. And then as we run the campaign, we can do A/B testing and we can understand whether the creative is actually resonating with that particular cohort, and we can modify it on the fly to be more relevant and to actually test better. And so there's a ton happening in that space that is just sort of the tip of the iceberg. So it's pretty exciting, and the marketers are A, very excited and very inspired by just being able to push the boundaries of that. So it's an exciting time.
That is very exciting. And I wanted to understand the balance then between your tier one and two agencies versus what you're doing in-house, because you have a lot more at your disposal now from what it sounds like. You've created infrastructure both internally without AI, with AI. That, how does that relationship work then? What are you using your agency partners for? What are you doing in-house, especially when it's a global brand like you are?
I think it's a great question. And I would say that it's very early days, you know, still. And I think even the agencies themselves are sort of figuring out how they're going to leverage and use AI and how do they bring relevance and value to their client base as a result of that. And so I do see that relationship shifting over time as we have the ability to self-serve on our own with AI, where you have those internal capabilities like we are developing. And then I don't think it renders the creative agencies irrelevant. I do think it changes the type of work that they're we're going to be looking for them to do. And it's actually a fundamental principle of how AI is working. It's bringing back the humanities, if you will, because what it's doing is it's actually making humans even more relevant than they once were. It's taking away some of the analysis and some of the research and the really critical and important but more boring parts of the job that can now get done through AI. And it's freeing up the human intellect and the human creativity to actually spend time on things that are going to differentiate, as opposed to saying, geez, I got to get this campaign done. And I got these 52 things on top of trying to be creative and think through how I'm going to, you know, pull ahead and do something that's breakthrough. You know, you're sucked down by all these other things that need to be done. Well, if all of a sudden AI can take that off your plate and you can spend your brain power on that sort of higher order creative intellectual capital, then to me, it creates an opportunity for agencies to punch above their weight even more in the, you know, the era of AI. So I
100%.
There's tremendous opportunity, and we have to think differently about how work gets done.
Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
100%. I mean, at my agency, we say, you know, AI is an augmentation tool. Like you said, to remove the grunt work as it is. I don't know if you want to call it grunt work, but like the less creative, less fun stuff. And if we're able to do more of what we love, I think we all get a better product out of it. I wanted to understand, you being a global brand, and you said, you know, we are a little bit more uniform now across all of our markets. How do you respond, though, to different markets when things happen, like especially in the financial sector, given where you are? There was the issue with yen a couple of weeks ago. You know, now maybe there was some stuff with the Fed, with their announcing, you know, interest rates and whatnot. How do you manage that? I know Manulife is a little bit different. You got the insurance of businesses and stuff like that as well. But just as an example, how do you manage when one part of the world might be dealing with something, another part of the world is dealing with something completely different, and you're still trying to have the same messaging?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's, you know, it's a reality of, I mean, we've been in Asia over 125 years. So this is not something that's new to our organization. We've continually balanced the need of being a global organization with the reality of having markets that are operating at, you know, different rates, if you will. And I think that's the benefit of being a very large, diverse organization, is that when we are running into some issues or challenges in one market, you've got a whole bunch of other markets that are, you know, all boats are rising and things are going really, really well. And I think that's one of the benefits of diversification, you know, as a starting point. But It's also a reason why, you know, we've got a global CMO, which is the role that I occupy. And then we also have, I have a CMO that sits in all four segments. So we have and we call our businesses segments. So we have a US business. I have a CMO who sits in the US. I have a Canadian business. We have a Canadian business and a CMO that sits in Canada. We have a global wealth and asset management division. And I have a CMO that sits, that oversees that. And then in Asia, we operate across, you know, call it 10, 11 markets. I have a CMO that sits in a regional office in Hong Kong. But then I also have CMOs in each of those markets that actually report up through the Asia, my Asia CMO. And that's really the way that we've been able to get the benefits of being a global organization where we have central thought leadership augmented by the thought leadership of what's actually happening on the ground in our markets so that we can, again, create that fine balance between having a globally consistent story, having global efficiency and global effectiveness, but never losing the flavor of what's happening on the ground. And so those teams are prepared to pivot and turn and execute against the realities of what's happening on the ground. And, you know, we face that every day, every week, every month where, you know, different things are happening or regulations change and we have to pivot and make product changes. And that means we have to have different campaigns. And so it's a muscle that's very well utilized in our organization. So it's something that we're very comfortable with.
Yeah, I would imagine in the financial space, compliance is a big one. Just the differences between different countries like Canada and US. I would imagine in Asia, like every single market there would be very different. Now, you've been doing this some time. You know, it sounds like you've gone through this journey. I'm wondering, I'm actually curious, is there anything that is surprising you today in the world of marketing and in the financial sector as well, in terms of what you've seen? Or has it kind of been there, done that? You know, I've been at this game for some time and I kind of seen it. Like, or is there anything that's a surprise?
I love the question. I would say I try to approach, I'm intellectually curious by nature. And I've also, you know, always had the philosophy that you need to approach life with a beginner's mindset. I think the day that you start saying, you know, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, I've seen everything, done everything, I'm kind of an expert on it, is I think the time that you need to get out and go and do something, get something different. And to me, you know, if I look at, and again, we talked a lot about AI, but AI is fundamentally transforming how we think about not just business, but how we think about our personal lives and how we think about the world, about society as a whole. And, you know, it's very early days and we're not quite sure how all of that is going to play out. And so I think more than ever, you know, and I encourage my teams every single day, And I sort of reference it as I say, you know, there's IQ, there's EQ. They were big. You know, we paid a lot of attention to it. Now it's AQ. And to me, AQ is your adaptability quotient. And as you think about just the sheer amount of change that is on us and that is going to continue to happen down the road, you know, people need to be highly adaptable. And I think that is one of the things that I look for in talent. And I spend a lot of time thinking about talent at Manulife and how I build my teams and the types of people that we bring to the organization. And I think more than ever, talent is a differentiator. You know, strategies are going to change, products are going to change, technology is going to change. But talent is the only constant that, you know, if you've got great talent with people that have a beginner's mindset, that are open to change, that are willing to embrace new things, that are willing to experiment and understand how to embed it and use it and leverage it and win with it, then I will take that any day over an outstanding strategy or awesome technology or products, because those things fade with time and anybody can copy those. People cannot copy talent. And that's where I think that is sort of a strategic weapon that I think is going to be the most important asset that we all have moving forward in a world that becomes increasingly ambiguous and uncertain.
In terms of talent, that's a great, great point. I mean, most successful entrepreneurs that I know, business leaders that I know, will tap into the fact that it's all about people. And you running a different, much larger organization, and you've been doing this for so long, you would probably see different generations. You've seen them come and go. And, you know, there's a lot of talk when I was first coming in, oh, millennials, this and that, and now it's Gen Zs, now it's Alpha. Is that really a thing, or is it just generationally people are complaining about the next folks coming up? Like, what do you see and how do you manage that talent?
I'm maybe a bit different than most. I don't buy into this whole generational thing. And I think actually when you look at how consumers are acting, I think less and less can you define people by generation. And so to me, it's about people and it's about personalization. I do think it is about understanding, you know, how people are shaped, what how they think, what their preferences are, how they choose to experiment and see and view the world. And I think if you can really do that and understand people as individuals and then help them come together as a team, I think you end up with a much better outcome. And I have some really, really young people that are like amazingly, you know, they are thought starters and they're agitating to be better and they are pushing the envelope and they are just trying to, you know, push, pull and cajole and bring their colleagues along. You know, we keep hearing, oh, you know, they want to get promoted and they don't want to prove anything. And none of that. I don't see that. I find those are generalities. And sure, you can find someone who's doing that or looks like that. But on the whole, I think that it really is about understanding people as individuals. And then I think crafting as we bring people together at Manulife, you know, it very much is, you know, more and more it's about bringing people together in pods, right? It takes a village nowadays to get things done, right? The super individual achiever that knows everything and is doing everything is a thing of the past. More and more it takes, you know, it takes a data scientist and it takes a data person and it takes, you know, someone who understands creative and someone from the contact centers who's on the front line, and it takes someone from our technology team. And we have to bring all these, you know, different people together that cross reporting lines and cross boundaries in organizations. And they have to come together for a period of time to drive a certain initiative, to prove out a concept, to be able to deploy something, and then to be able to scale it. And I think as you know, that is one of the strengths of our organization, is that we continually think about how work gets done. And we're not afraid, you know, I'll have people sitting in my colleagues' teams and running initiatives with them, and they'll come and do stuff, you know, with our team. And so I view that as a very sort of fungible way of being able to drive change and to get work done in an organization. And you end up getting the best and the brightest, you know, across a company, as opposed to saying, this is my team and we own this. We don't own anything, right? It's a collective, collaborative sort of approach. And the more that people understand that and are able to embrace that, then I think the more we're going to be able to take advantage of how AI is actually going to change how work gets done. Because large swaths of work are going to get taken over by AI. It doesn't mean there's going to be less work or we're going to get rid of everybody. It actually means that work's going to shift. And it's going to shift to more thought leadership and more intellect and more creativity. And so you need to make sure that you've got the right sort of diverse experts at the table to be able to continue to drive the business forward and not get paralyzed by change.
Wow, that's a great answer. In terms of, you know, we've been talking a lot of the future. I want to hear a little bit more about your past. You've been doing this some time. I want to hear about like a challenge, some part in your career, marketing journey that was like, it kind of stumped you for a minute and it took you a little bit of retooling your own toolbox to come up the other end and be more successful. I'd love to hear a story about that so that some of our, you know, less seasoned marketers might be able to understand kind of how to get to where you are.
You know, I don't know that there's one thing that has happened. You know, it's not like I've had a major crisis in my life where, you know, the whole world fell apart and you know, I didn't know what to do. I've always been an advocate for change and I've always wanted to push the envelope and, you know, people often call me, my teams often call me a bar raiser. And I always like to try and do things better than we did them last week, last month, last quarter. And so I think when you're trying to drive change and transformation, you're going to run into instances where things don't work or things go sideways, or, you know, life is unpredictable. It you know, it doesn't always work out as you thought. In fact, it doesn't work out more often than it does work out. And I think that goes back to my comment around, you know, AQ. And I think that's one of the tenets of how I ran my career from a very, very early point, was never to look at the world as it is today, but look at where the world is going. Because I think if you get stuck in today or you get stuck in the past, that is a recipe for disaster, because you're actually not prepared for how the world will change. And so for me, it's always about trying to connect the dots and trying to scenario plan around if things do go sideways, what is the optionality that we have? How can we pivot? How can we change things? How can we just kill the idea? Because you know what? It actually is not working out, and we don't actually see a path forward for it to work out, right? Don't get emotionally attached to things. Never be afraid to step up and go, you know what? That's wrong. It's not the right idea. Let's kill it. Let's move on and let's go and do something else. And I think sometimes just as marketers, but as leaders or as people, we get married to an idea and we're afraid to say, you know what? It's not working and we need to just cut it off and move on. And so I think so. Those are some of the things that I've just applied kind of, you know, every day. And when you've got an issue, bring in the best people you have, get them around the table and, you know, be transparent. Hey, we've got a problem, right? I've never refused to acknowledge that we have a problem. I'm always the first to say, let's talk about what's going wrong before we talk about what's going right. Because if we know what's going wrong and we've got that transparency and that understanding, that self-awareness, then we can understand where our potential pitfalls are and where our emerging risks are. And then we can know what types of solutions and options are available to us to get ahead of problems. And so I think it's about trying to prevent problems before they magnify into unsolvable issues.
I think that's a really good insight, and change is all around us. And if we don't change, well, the world's going to change for us, to change us for, you know, like, so I wanted to also understand you being working at a publicly traded company, there's quarterly reports, you know, right now we got, well, NVIDIA is actually reporting later today at the end of close. And there's always this pressure, I feel, that happens when you're working in a company that's publicly traded. When you're running these marketing campaigns, you're doing strategy and it's long-term view. How do you wade through that? How do you navigate when you have shareholders and investors that are only thinking 90 days out? How do you get that buy-in and make sure that your marketing is going to last the test of time?
I think that's a fun part of the job.
Oh, really? Not the pressure from investors calling, going, I don't like this or that?
I mean, pressure. I like pressure. I perform well under pressure. I find it, you know, it's a challenge. It's fun. It's exciting. And it allows you to you know, do things that you might otherwise not do when you're just trying to maintain stuff. So that would be kind of my first response.
Well, how do you not get pulled? Sorry to interrupt, but like, how do you not get pulled into the wrong, like, because you know, you the business wants to go this way, the leadership wants to go this way, and then you got a whole, you know, market over here going, no, stock price is not doing well, we want that. Like, how do you make sure that you're able to bring them along and not get clouded by the noise?
You know, it's leadership. Like, things are going to happen. The world is not going to work out the way you thought. And, you know, you might have decided you were going to go and spend X dollars on a campaign or you were going to go and do this initiative or that initiative. And then all of a sudden the economy's struggling and, you know, the world has changed or COVID has happened, you know, which was amazing. Talk about a pivot when COVID happened. I mean, you know, complete rethink of priorities and, you know, what we were going to do and how we were going to do it. And I think you can apply that to every single day. And you always need to have a long-term vision of where it is you want to go and plan for the long-term. But you also have to make sure that you understand what the short-term realities are. And I don't think that that's very different than what people experience in their own personal lives, right? Things go sideways. You might have planned to take a trip and all of a sudden, you know, your spouse loses their job or, you know, something, one of your kids gets sick or something happens with a family member. Like, it's sometimes we don't carry over those parallels into our business life. And I would say those, you know, those pressures and those realities are no different. They're just called something different, but it's the ability to remain calm under pressure, to understand that these things happen. It's no one's fault. And, you know, don't get too attached to something because you might need to pivot. You might need to make a change. But then think about, you know, if you're thinking ahead and you're scenario planning and you've sort of thought through, because these things don't always happen. I mean, COVID happened. That was a surprise to everyone. So that one, no one could really plan for that. But, you know, most of the things that happen, generally speaking, you can kind of see the clouds coming on, you know, gathering on the horizon. And I think when you start to see the clouds gathering on the horizon is when you should start talking about the reality of you might need to make some changes. And if you get ahead of that, you're transparent, you don't sort of, you know, choose to ignore that, then I think you're in you know, the pivot is no surprise. And I think you learn to be a lot more agile and and nimble. And I think that's just a reality of the world in which we operate, and actually only going to be more so as we move forward. So that needs to become a muscle that you can exercise on an ongoing basis, because things are really going to continue to change around us. And I think it's that openness to change and that beginner's mindset and that ability to get ahead of where the puck is going, to use a Canadian analogy, I think is really, really important. And that, I think, is the reality. I'm not dismissing that it's easy or that it's not, sometimes, disappointing. But, I think if you come at it in a very clear way, you're able to work around it. And oftentimes I've seen this, sometimes actually come out with a better solution and a better approach than perhaps what you went in on, because it forced you to think more creatively. It forced you to think, because all of a sudden you might have less dollars to do something and you've got to rethink your approach, and you start to really pull out your intellect and your creativity, and you oftentimes come out with a better approach. So never waste a crisis.
Absolutely. I actually say this to my team a lot, right? And my dad always says in Chinese, the word for crisis is the merger of danger and opportunity, right? And if you look for the opportunity, you're good. And I do a bit of meditation. They talk about the impermanence of life. And if we're able to grab that, I think you called it AQ. Absolutely, I think, is the future. Now, we're almost out of time here. And we normally, in Marketing News Canada, we always do a little bit of a quick round, fireside, just throw some questions at you kind of thing. And wanted to see if you'd be willing to play this little game here.
Sure.
All right. So what was your first job?
My first job was actually in a pharmacy. I was asked to take over on Saturdays in cosmetics, which I knew absolutely nothing about.
My sister did that. I think her first job was at the pharmacy up the street. What's your favorite song right now that you're streaming?
Oh my gosh. I like music a lot, but I don't have time to figure out who the artist is or what the name of the song is. And so I actually get oftentimes people around me to put stuff on my playlist. And so I don't really have a favorite song right now.
What's the last concert you went to?
The last concert I went to was U2, actually, quite a while ago. Yeah.
Are you night owl or early bird?
Oh, total early bird. Total early bird. I get half my day done between 6 and 9.
Yep. Are you a cat or dog person?
I like cats, but I'm definitely a dog person. Definitely a dog person. Yeah, I have a whippet. So I think I sort of look like it, long nose, long legs. Yeah, definitely a dog person. How about you?
I'm a dog person, but my wife is a cat person. So obviously we have a cat in the house. And that cat and I are not really friends. I don't know if I'm the roommate or the cat's the roommate, but one of us is begrudgingly existing beside each other. So, Lily the cat is who we have right now.
Wow, it's a great name.
All right. Well, hey, thank you very much for your time there, Karen. How can people get a hold of you?
I'm on LinkedIn, and you can call me at Manulife. I would encourage people to go and take a look at our behavioral insurance offering. It's the most amazing thing we do in both our Canadian and US businesses, where it's a win-win situation where people can buy insurance products, and for healthy behaviors, helping them live healthier, longer lives, they can access content, they can access rewards, they can access even discounts on their insurance. And it's been pretty phenomenal what we've been able to do there. Even in the US, we're actually offering multi-cancer early detection blood tests that are basically lifesavers for several of our clients. We now offer full body MRI that people can get front of the line access on through our products in the US. And so it's a real differentiator for us. So we partner with Grail out of the US with the Galleri test. And so it is a early detection multi-cancer blood test that detects over 52 different types of cancer at stage 1 and stage 2. And it can state with 86% accuracy where in your body the cancer is developing. because it's through methylation. So it's a, you know, a pancreatic cell that's shedding, or a lung cell, or a throat cell. And we've had customers who've had positive signals and who have been diagnosed with cancer, and their oncologists can't even believe that that cancer has been found that early. In fact,
and this is only available in the States, or is it available in Canada?
Only available in the States right now. They're running some trials in Canada. We're working with the Galleri test to bring it to Canada. But it is right now only available in the US, but it is unbelievable. And
that's super cool.
Lives. So it's amazing for us, because it's a win-win for our customers. We're helping them, you know, live healthier, live longer. And even for our employees and our colleagues, you know, it really connects to purpose of why we do this. Why is insurance important, and how are we adding value to the lives of our customers? And so it's an area that we are a health leader in North America. And we are continuing to develop our assets and our capabilities against health to deliver more value to our customers.
That's amazing. Well, hey, Karen, thank you very much for your time today. It was wonderful to hear your journey and all your insights. I'm sure our listeners would be happy to spend this time. So thank you very much. And thanks, everyone, for listening to Marketing News Canada. I'm Ted. This is Karen. We're signing off.
Thanks, Ted.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded in the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editors Travis Jeffers and The Podfather.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good, all 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.